Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Circuses on the air.
When the president does it,
sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you
tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke, may the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Oh, we're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
China's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
Now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
All right, a little history here, buddy. 1752, Benjamin Franklin's first test of the lightning rod. It was in Boston that Franklin first stumbled upon this other scientist's experiments. He quickly turned his home into a laboratory. During one experiment, he accidentally shocked himself. In one of his letters, he described the shock as, and I love this, a universal blow throughout my whole body from head to foot, which seemed within as well as without. After which, the first thing I took notice of the violent, quick shaking of my body. He also had a feeling of numbness in his arms and the back of his neck that gradually wore off. His son William, 21 years old.
Little did he know.
Yeah, exactly.
What he was, you know, that it could have been far worse.
Yeah, and then I think when it was in the steeple at the Christ Church, I think in Philadelphia, that he got struck.
Oh, okay.
Back in the day. 1792, U.S. established the military draft. 1926, I've got to find my notes here. Maxwell House Coffee, good to the last drop, was trademark registered. And where did that come from, Dave Schwann?
The good to the last drop?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the story I have was that Teddy Roosevelt mm-hmm. was in a place called Maxwell House or some sort of an inn or a hotel or something, enjoyed the coffee and told everybody, this coffee is good to the last drop.
Now, I believe what we're going to listen to, because I haven't heard this one, is it's a commercial from the 70s for Maxwell House. And I think at the time, Vivian Vance, who was most famous for I Love Lucy and the Lucy Show being Lucy's sidekick, became the spokesperson
for
Maxwell House. Let's take a listen.
Ah, coffee. Maxine, we're nowhere with this plan.
You need a fresh cup of instant Maxwell House.
Oh, you're big on instant.
Not just instant. Instant Maxwell House. These flavor buds make every cup taste fresh, like your first cup in the morning.
Really fresh.
Good to the last drop. How about that?
That's it.
That earns me a cup. Instant Maxwell House. Every cup tastes fresh, like your first cup in the morning.
Yeah, that was Vivian Vance. And I think, you know, she was... Vivian's got a pretty long history as well. I was just reading this. Her sister just passed away not long ago. She looked just like her, but Vivian died in like 79 of cancer. I mean, she's been gone a long, 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 long time. But she was, she did I Love Lucy. She did the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour. She did, she was pretty much Lucy's sidekick in all of her television career. Then she was her buddy on Here's Lucy.
Right.
And then I know she had cancer and, you know, and tried to stave it off over the years, but ended up doing the Maxwell House Coffee commercials and then did a bunch of Lucy specials with her before she passed away.
She passed away before Lucy did, I think.
Oh, 1979.
Yeah.
Before Desi,
right.
Even. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Because Lucy passed away in the 80s.
It was just this week she passed away. It was the anniversary of her death. It was 1989.
89?
Yeah.
Okay.
Her last appearance was at the Oscars with Bob Hope, and it was like 3 or 4 weeks earlier.
Oh, wow.
And then she went into some surgery.
She was trying to recover from that, didn't make it.
Did not make it. Now, actually, I have a buddy of mine. I got to tell you the story. I've got a buddy of mine. He's got a book called Hollywood Heyday. He's about my age, but when he was in high school and early years of college, he would travel to Hollywood and go interview literally the biggest names, Milton Berle, Sid Caesar, and knock on the door. Lucille Ball.
Knock on the door.
Yeah, and some in some cases. But he said Lucy was one of his favorite conversations, and she was a tough old bird. 1930, the U.S. Planetarium opened in Chicago. First, 1928, Max Adler and architect Ernest Grunsfeld traveled to Germany and looked at this planetarium that they heard about, and they were so impressed that Adler decided to donate some money to open this museum. And it's America's first planetarium. And of course, it's part of Chicago's museum campus. There you go. 1932, Al Capone entered the Atlanta Penitentiary, convicted of income tax evasion.
That's all they could get him on.
They could never get him on anything else.
October 19, 1931, Chicago gangland boss Al Capone, alias Scarface, is arrested by federal prosecutors. Famed for the St. Valentine's Day massacre of Bugsy Moran's gang, he is also responsible for many other gang war bloodbaths. However, Capone managed to slip free of such charges in court. Upon moving from Brooklyn in 1920, he rose from a two-bit bootlegger to the undisputed warlord of Chicago gangsters. But a federal judge finally sentenced him to 11 years for, of all things, tax evasion.
Yeah, crazy, huh?
Of all things, tax evasion.
I think over the last month or so was also the anniversary when Geraldo opened up the empty safe.
Oh, okay.
Capone safe in Chicago. It was on Channel 9, too, wasn't it?
I remember.
It was locally. It was on Channel 9.
I
remember. Yeah. 1956, Elvis scored his first number one single, Heartbreak Hotel, top of the charts, his first million seller, and it was the best-selling single of 56. The lyrics were based on a newspaper article about a suicide of a lonely man who jumped from a hotel window.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that Heartbreak Hotel, where I'll be just a lonely baby. Well, I'm so lonely, I'll be just so lonely, I could die. Although it's always crowded, you still can find some room for broken-hearted lovers to cry there in the gloom. I'll be just so lonely, baby. I'll be just so lonely. I'll be just so lonely, they could die. Tears keep flowing, the desk clerk's dressed in black. Well, they've been so long on the lonely street, they'll never look back and think you're so, think you're so lonely, baby. Well, they're so lonely, well, they're so lonely, and they could die. Well, if your baby leaves you, you got a tale to tell. Well, just take a walk down the lonely street to Heartbreak Hotel, where you will be. Could you be just so lonely, baby? Well, you will be lonely. You'll be so lonely, you could die. So lonely, baby. Well, they're so lonely. They'll be so lonely they could die.
57, just that next year, Alan Freed hosts a rock and roll show, which was the first primetime network rock show, widely credited for creating the name rock and roll.
Yeah, did you ever see Rock Around the Clock?
Oh, yeah, the movie.
The movie.
The movie.
Yeah.
It's wild to see that. I know, and watching Bill Haley in a lot of that. But, yeah, that's a cool movie. I mean, that just kind of really talks about the dawn of that genre of music.
Right,
yeah.
One of the things that movie is, and especially the Elvis movie or the documentary points out, is that what became rock and roll came from a whole mess of different sources. It didn't just happen,
right.
You know, all of
right.
a sudden we had the music. It came from a wide variety of sources and just was kind of a mixture of many things.
Well,
that's what's intriguing about it.
Here is a little clip from Alan Freed. So there's not a lot of this available, but it's the rock and roll show. Let's take a listen.
And here it is, Alan Freed's rock and roll party. And here he is in person, Alan Freed.
Hello, everybody. How y'all? Welcome to our Rock and Roll Jubilee of Stars. And here we go to rockin' with Waylon Tenorman, Freddie Mitchell, and the Rock and Roll Boogie. Here we go.
There you go, little Alan Freed.
Rock and roll boogie.
That doesn't quite sound like rock and roll, but that was one of his first shows.
That is right at the beginning.
The beginning, very beginning. Also in 1957, it was the last broadcast of I Love Lucy on CBS television. It was called Lucy Dedicates a Statue, when she was all, she looked like she was a cement statue that was being dedicated. So it was the last original I Love Lucy episode, but then they went on to do the Lucy Desi Comedy Hours.
I was just going to say the hours
for three years they did those. I think I don't know how many there are.
And they had a place in the country.
Yeah,
remember?
Well, the last season they moved to the country, and they used to rerun those on CBS over the summer with a different name. It was called Lucy in Connecticut.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
Lucy in Connecticut.
You can actually find it on YouTube. The original opening, which was this pencil drawing of them moving to the country. It was pretty wild. But I Love Lucy, and then. After the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour, and this is a true story too, is if you ever watched the last one, it was with Ernie Kovacs, the last time they ever played Lucy and Ricky and Ethel and Fred. And you could tell that there was a tension between Lucy and Desi, but there was also a little melancholy involved in all this too.
And this is leading up to the divorce.
Yeah, well, yeah. She filed the next day.
The next day.
Ricky was... he gained a lot of weight. He looked angry because I think he was drinking at the time. But they kissed each other in a very, like, I got to do this. We got to kiss each other at the end of the show. And then they both kind of stared at each other in kind of not the normal Lucy Desi stare. And that very next day, she filed for divorce.
Well, like any kids whose parents get divorced, you know, you definitely don't want that to happen. And it was terrifying. I hear Cher singing in my head somewhere right now. Because that's exactly what happened. You better sit down, kids, you know. And those words are pretty much, I think, what every kid goes through when their parents tell them it's not working out anymore. Part of me probably totally understood why, because we had heard the arguments, and that wasn't fun either. But it was hard. It was very hard. And I didn't want my daddy out of the house. He was out of the house enough. I didn't want him to go any further away. You know, and when my mother wanted to remarry, I mean, that was like a knife in the heart. Just, you're kidding, right? It's only been a year, not even. So it was a rough period for all of us.
So she married Gary Morton.
Right, who was a nice guy, you know? I mean, he was a funny guy, comedian, Gary, a Catskill comedian guy, and tall and kind of handsome-ish, made her laugh, and didn't embarrass her, you know, in any way. He didn't drink too much. He didn't smile and giggle with the ladies. I don't know if they had a passionate marriage. I hope so. I don't really know. We didn't talk about that stuff. And my father and my mother stayed good friends after the divorce. It took a few years to calm down, but they stayed good friends to the bitter end, and that was good for the kids.
In 1973, Ernie Banks filled in for Cubs manager Whitey Lockman, who was ejected during the game, thus technically becoming baseball's first black manager.
Ha, okay.
Because he had to fill in.
Yeah. You know, every time that comes around, it slips my mind that he was,
he did that.
A manager. Yeah.
Yeah, he did that at some point. Absolutely. Yeah. Let's see here. 1978, the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever started an 18-week run. Oh, stop dancing,
I had a girlfriend,
Dave. Stop dancing.
My senior year in college, my girlfriend lived for that movie.
Is that right?
Oh.
Ah, yeah. That was a big deal.
Yeah. It was huge.
Number one in UK, number one in the US. The album, which featured 7 Bee Gees songs, went to sell over 30 million copies worldwide.
You still hear this. You know, you go into places where they'll use, you know, one of the computerized generated music
things
where you can, you know, kind of set up your own music mix. I heard a Bee Gees song the other day in a place.
Well, I love this. It's also an Airplane, when they were spoofing the whole Saturday Night Fever piece in Airplane as well. 1984, holding the record of the longest number of innings played in a Major League Baseball game, the Chicago White Sox beat the Milwaukee Brewers 7-6 in 25 innings. That was 1984, 25 innings. The game started on May 8th and ended on May 9th. 2002, another Sox piece here. The Anaheim Angels crushed the Chicago White Sox 19-0. Let's see here.
And that's not even the worst one, because I know the Rangers a few years ago beat the Orioles, and it was like 30-2 or something like that.
The Angels joined the 1923 Indians, the 1939 Yankees, and the 1950 Red Sox at the time as the only teams to beat two opponents by 19 or more runs in the same season. In the same season, 2004, what else do I have here? Oh, 2004, series Friends had its last episode, if you can believe it. Have a great weekend, Dave.
You too, Dave.
Thanks, buddy.
You bet.